Okay, so what I'm trying to do today is I'm going to start talking a little bit about what sort of generated this idea of HIV testing in pharmacies with a little bit of background as to why we think this is important. Also, a study that, a number of studies that we're going to talk specifically about one that have been conducted mainly by the New York Academy of Medicine, and most of them have been led by Crystal Fuller, who is the senior investigator in this Mari round for this study. So we'll start talking about first the conflict of interest, which I think is important. We don't have any conflict of interest, none of us at least, that I'm aware of. And in the background, we've been working with injection drug users, and we know that they have a long history of poor access, even if they have insurance. We're talking about access, defining access very broadly, because when they have insurance, yeah, they can go to the clinic. A lot of the times when they go to the clinic, the physicians or whoever the provider of services usually do not, the IDU may not tell them that they are high risk and they are not really receiving the preventive care that they need to receive. So a lot of them are not accessing care. Also, there's a lot of problems with discrimination with this community when they access care or they try to access care. We know that the HIV continues to really burden injection drug users, especially Black and Hispanic injection drug users. They're at much higher risk of contracting the HIV. And in East Harlem, which is the area where we have targeted for this particular study, 62% of the HIV transmission is via injection drug use. This is probably fueled by lack of access to clean syringes and also fear of arrest, of incarceration, and infractions for carrying drug paraphernalia, for carrying syringes, basically. So because of all this, and this is part of the preliminary studies that were done before we came up with the idea of testing in pharmacies, the expanded syringe access started in January of 2001, and initially it was the expanded syringe access demonstration. People really wanted to see how this will work, and the idea was to allow the pharmacies to sell syringes to drug users, so a limited amount of syringes. I think it's 10 syringes, at a time, and also kind of trying to work with the syringe exchange programs because they were limited in the city. I mean, a lot of the times people really do not go to the syringe access. There's not so many of them. So we're trying to get pharmacies to do, this kind of work. There's a lot more pharmacies and a lot easier to be accessed. So this program was very successful, I mean, in terms of allowing or giving access to the IDUs for clean syringes, and actually for the pharmacies, they really like doing this. And in the slide mentions, 87% of the ESAP registered pharmacies in New York reported that they were willing to really take the time to also offer drug abuse to contribute even more, not just selling the syringes, but also going beyond that and offering services, referrals, health related information. So we believe that really ESAP has paved the way for pharmacies to act as access points to health and social services among IDU customers. Actually, in what has happened is that in some of the communities, you've seen some of the trends in syringe sharing and syringe reuse have been declining, like little by little, since the ESAP has been implemented in some areas. So this is a good thing. So then because of this, the ESAP program now, and encouraged by the support among the pharmacists, because we know that the pharmacists really want to do a little bit more than just selling the syringes, NIAM and Dr. Fuller, the principal investigator, really undertook this study called The Pharmacies as a Link to Community Service, PATLINK. It's a pilot study. The study aimed at using community-based participatory research in terms of like evaluating whether the pharmacies can provide extended services to IDU. How would that look like? What kind of things would they have to do? How would that work? And also, we wanted to evaluate the impact of the expanded pharmacy services on pharmacy staff. And you want to see whether you know, like adding this layer of like providing services to the IDUs really was going to have any kind of impact on sales and on other kinds of services that the pharmacy would provide. So for that study, for the PATLINK study, which is not the study that we are doing right now, this is a preliminary study that kind of led to that, was there were 13 pharmacies in Upper Manhattan, Lower East Side, Bronx, Brooklyn, and Far Rockaway, which is all in New York area. And the eligibility criteria included that they were ESAP registered, that they have three new syringe customers a month, and no additional requirements for purchase of syringes. Like if you go and buy, you know, nobody's going to ask you, well, why do you need syringes? Are you a diabetic? These pharmacies were recruited between October 05 and July 06. In the study, the pharmacies received training in how to really work with the injectors, and how they provide referral information, and how would they counsel customers on safe injection and proper disposal. And two of these trainings were offered. One mostly also focused on research activities, providing expanded services, and the other focused on harm reduction, overdose prevention, and injection safety. During this study, also there was a working group that was composed of like people from different different professions, or people that were really acting as our advisors, and were like people from the community, different pharmacies, people from CBOs, and they all have extensive experience in working with injectors or working with pharmacies or syringe, any kind of syringe access. So we receive a lot of advice from this group, and everything that we do or we did at that time really was discussed with the working group. That was a very important piece. So the pharmacies will, when they have, for example, the injector coming in, they will engage this injector if there was a regular customer, usually if they've been there two or more times to obtain syringes, and that was considered a regular customer, they will engage the customer, and then they start talking to them about, prevention, treatment options, injection tips, disposal, et cetera, et cetera. And they will give them also information about HIV and hepatitis C. They also receive some, if I'm not mistaken, they receive like fit packs and just like paraphernalia so they can stay safe. The data collection for the pharmacies, we just collected data on the daily logs of syringe sales, and they underwent brief monthly semi-structured interviews during a monthly visit by an IM research staff. And also, they underwent longer surveys in the baseline in the 6 months, and also at the end of the study. For the injector part of the study, the injectors who were repeat customers were approached by the pharmacies. Once they were approached and they were giving information, referral information, any kind of safety and disposal information, they will be referred to New York Academy of Medicine research storefront site, and they will go like surveys. Oops. Okay. Let me hurry up. So this is the results of that study. Some of the results, at least, the ones that were more relevant to, you know, to what we to the MARI study. Now, they didn't think that they didn't lose business when they have, you know, like this role of counseling injectors or trying to give them health information. They didn't think the theft or the crime was a problem. And they didn't think the syringe disposal was not improper. But if you look at the one in the about HIV, they really thought that this will help in HIV prevention. And actually, the yellow line is the pharmacist, and the red line is technicians, because sometimes the syringe sale could be done by either. Some of the technicians thought that maybe that increased drug use, but most of them thought that really what they were doing with the syringes decreased HIV transmission. And this is just breaking it down to willingness to provide additional services by pharmacies. So we're just looking at the pharmacies here, like 22% of the pharmacies. 22% of the sales are completed by the pharmacies. And of those pharmacies, most of them, like 73%, thought that they could do HIV testing in the pharmacy. 83% thought they could provide other health services, and 75% thought they could provide vaccinations. So very quickly here, what we also wanted to look at the side of the injectors, and initially, I mean, they thought that really the ones that participated in the study thought that they felt really comfortable going into a pharmacy. The ones that were the control groups were maybe not as comfortable, and that was like a significant difference between these two groups in terms of comfort in buying, going in the pharmacy and buying syringes. But they all agree that pharmacies should really sell sterile syringes to injection drug users. And in this one, also the group that participated in our study, they thought the pharmacies really care about them and about their health and well-being. So let me move on, because I have 5 minutes, or maybe three now, right? So basically the conclusions is like, yeah, the pharmacies are feasible environments to provide services to IDU syringe customers. And, you know, like I mentioned before, a lot of them would have been interested in providing HIV referral information and HIV testing, which and the IDUs were also willing to receive this information from the pharmacies, which led to the idea of evaluating HIV testing in the pharmacies, which is the study that we are currently conducting with MARI funding that we obtain. And as you all know, I mean, this is just taking off right now. We don't have, we're not starting to collect data yet. We're going through the process of the human subjects review and the OMB. But the idea basically is that which will be soon finished. And but the idea here is that what we want to do is we want to really see whether it's feasible to test IDUs who using the ESAP like structure, the injectors coming to pharmacies and buying clean syringes and being used to doing this, whether we can really test the injectors when they come to pharmacies and test them for HIV. And also this is thinking about, remember I said that the injectors have very limited access to healthcare, so we feel like we're providing a service that they're not really accessing as much. We have a working group as well with us. That's our new logo that one of the research coordinator for us did, and we thought it was really cool. The methods are, just to go really quickly, we're going to recruit 10 pharmacies that are going to do just HIV referrals, and we're going to recruit 2 pharmacies that are going to do testing. This has been very challenging to get pharmacies to do testing, because a lot of the pharmacies, especially in East Harlem, they're very small pharmacies. The chain pharmacies are very difficult to recruit at this point, and we're working on that. But for the independent pharmacies, they rarely have space to really allow us to do something like that. So we are becoming very creative as we go. But I think we have one or two pharmacies that I think are going to be the ones that are going to be doing this. And they're going to be trained, like in the PAT link, we're going to be training them on giving information and the data collection for the drug users, and for pharmacy is going to be very similar. For the drug users, though, we're not sending them to research storefront, but we are going to be sending our research staff to the pharmacies, and they're going to be going through the interview using a CASI as well, and they're going to be doing this at the pharmacies or any place where they can do it if the pharmacy doesn't have, like, an area that they can do it. So hopefully we're going to like look at the impact of HIV testing referrals on the and on-site testing on the pharmacies. We're going to check to see if this this is something that is going to the IDUs are going to like accept and take, and we're looking at many other things like demographics and drug and sexual risk behaviors, perceptions, attitudes, prior HIV testing, and positive diagnosis. So this is an ongoing work, and hopefully next year, or not, maybe not in next year, but 2 years, we're going to be probably coming back and presenting the data. I just want to acknowledge, thank you CDC for the funding, and Robert Wood Johnson was the funding for the PATLINK study, and we want to study everybody who's been so helpful to us, the participants, the research staff, the working group, and the CDC mentors.
Okay, thank you, Sylvia. Okay.